take you to safety, Ulf." Though she knew it was foolish, Darsha felt a little thrill at being called a Jedi, even by a droid.
"About time," the Fundorian said. He stood quickly. "Let's get out of here before it gets dark. Not that it ever really stops getting dark around here."
He moved toward the room's entrance, then stopped and looked back at Darsha.
"Well, come on," he said testily. "What are you waiting for?"
"I'm just trying to decide how best to get back to my skyhopper," Darsha replied. "I don't relish the idea of wading through those poor beings out there again."
"We'll be the poor beings if we don't get moving. This is Raptor territory. They make those scum out there look like the Republic Senate. Now let's go."
Darsha moved toward the hallway. Ulf stood aside to let her pass.
"I'm the one who needs protecting. You go first."
Whatever good he was to the Council, Darsha was sure Ulf the Fundorian wasn't valued for his bravery. "All right," Darsha said. She took a deep breath and reached for the Force to calm herself. She was a Jedi Padawan with a job to do. Time to get on with it. The door panel slid open. Darsha quested with the Force and felt no sense of anybody nearby who posed a danger. Thus reassured, she started down the street with Ulf. The vagrants seemed to materialize from out of the shadows, clustering around them again. Ulf shoved at them as they crowded in.
"Get away from me, filthy creatures!"
"Just keep moving," Darsha said to him. She had refused the droid's offer of escort because she didn't want to draw any more attention than absolutely necessary. If she had to, she could activate her lightsaber. She had no doubt that just the sight of the energy blade would send the majority of the street people fleeing. But she hoped it wouldn't be necessary. They were almost to the intersection. And then her heart, already pounding from nervous tension, suddenly tried to batter its way up her throat. Her skyhopper was still where she had parked it, hovering 20 meters up in the air. Clustered on the street beneath it was a heterogeneous assortment of beings, about a dozen in all. All of them appeared to be in the late adolescent stage of their particular species. All were dressed in colorful and motley styles, and all looked extremely dangerous. Ulf the Fundorian gasped and whispered in a strangled tone,
"The Raptors?"
Darsha had heard tales of the street gangs that terrorized many of the more run-down sectors of Coruscant's surface. The Raptors were reputed to be the worst, by far. She had hoped to complete her mission quickly enough to avoid an encounter with them. So much for that idea. Several grappling hooks had snagged into the two-person craft, and from them dangled ropes. Three members of the gang, a human female and two male Bith, had climbed aboard and were busily ransacking the vehicle. Even as Darsha watched, one of them managed to disable the autopilot, causing the craft to settle gently to the street. This was greeted by a cheer from the rest of the gang. Ulf grabbed her robe and tried to pull her into the shadows of the narrow street.
"Quick, before they see us."
She shook off his grasp. "I can't let them strip the skyhopper. It's our only way out of here. Wait here until I've dealt with them." Then, forcing herself to project a confidence she did not in any way feel, Darsha strode toward the Raptors. There was no one else on the street now, save for the Fundorian cowering somewhere behind her. No one in their right mind wanted to be around when the Raptors were on the prowl. "That's my skyhopper," she said, relieved to find that her voice was not shaking. "Please return the things you stole and move away from it." The Raptors looked at each other in astonishment before breaking into the various sounds that constituted laughter for each species. One of the human males, lean and wiry, sporting an improbable mane of green hair standing straight up in an electrostatic field, swaggered toward her. "No around here, I'm guessing," he said, causing more sniggering to erupt from his compatriots. Darsha reviewed her options quickly. There weren't many. She was one against a dozen. And while her knowledge of the Jedi fighting arts improved the odds somewhat, she was still not at all confident in her ability to come out ahead in a battle. She was on their turf, after all, and for all she knew, there might be a dozen more of them lurking in the shadows. But there were alternatives to fighting. The mind trick she had tried earlier on the beggars hadn't been completely successful, but it had turned away a few of them. It might serve now to confuse the raptors long enough to allow her to reach the vehicle. Of course, she still had to get Ulf in the craft with her, but one problem at a time. She raised her right hand, fanning the fingers in a gesture designed to focus their attention while she reached out mentally for the force. "You're not interested in me," she said, using the soft but compelling tone she had been taught, "or my vehicle." She could see by their confused and uncertain expressions that it was working, could feel their wills beginning to vibrate in resonance with hers. Greenhair was either the leader or something close to it, because when he nodded and said slowly, "We're not interested in her or her vehicle," the rest of the gang mumbled the same words in ragged unison. Darsha took a few steps forward, making the hypnotic gesture again. "You might as well go now," she told Greenhair. "There's nothing interesting going on here."
"We might as well go now. There's nothing interesting going on here."
The rest of the gang again echoed him. Darsha kept moving slowly but steadily forward. She stepped past Greenhair and was now in the midst of them, only a step or two away from her craft. She had them now. Another moment and she would be in the Skyhopper. A scream echoed down the dark street. Startled, Darsha whipped around, staring back toward the source of the cry. It was Ulf the Fondorian, staggering out into the middle of the narrow thoroughfare, shaking and kicking his leg frantically to dislodge a large armored rat that had clamped its jaws onto his shin. Even as she realized who it was, she realized as well that her tenuous mind lock on the raptors had been shattered by the unexpected sound. Blinking and shaking their heads as if awakening from slumber, the raptors realized that their prey had obligingly delivered itself right into their midst. Darsha had no choice now but to fight. She reached for her lightsaber, but before she could seize it, they were upon her. Hath Monchar was afraid. He was afraid, yes, but underneath that was another emotion, one far less familiar to him than fear. This emotion was pride. A nervous and fragile pride, it was true, but pride nevertheless. He had taken a chance, a big chance. He had dared to steer his life in a new and, with any luck, more profitable direction. He had a right to feel proud of that, he told himself. He glanced around at the patrons of the tavern he was sitting in. It was a different establishment than the one he usually frequented when on Coruscant. That tavern was in the affluent Kaldani Spires monad, where he had an apartment. He was not staying in his apartment on this visit, however. That would make him too easy to find. Instead, he had rented a cheap domicile near the Galactic Museum under an assumed name. Hath Monchar had come to Coruscant because the capital world was the best place to move information quickly and anonymously. That was what he had to sell, information. Specifically, information about the upcoming blockade of Naboo and the fact that the man behind it all was a Sith Lord. He took another gulp of the agaric ale he was drinking. Yes, the risks were high, but so was the potential for profit. All he needed was to contact the right person as an intermediary, someone who knew the people who would pay handsomely for the news he had. All it would take was a bit more fortitude on his part. Hath Monchar signaled the Baraguin bartender. One more flagon of ale ought to give him the fortitude he needed. Mawi Lin had been a bounty hunter for going on 10 standard years. Ever since she had been forced to leave her homeworld after killing a corrupt government official. During that time, she had traveled nearly the length and breadth of the galaxy on various assignments. Oddly enough, however, she had never been to Coruscant, and she was looking forward to seeing the capital of the galaxy. The assignment from the Nemoidian Viceroy's lieutenant seemed straightforward enough. Lin did not anticipate any great trouble in finding the missing Hath Monchar, even on a crowded world like Coruscant. As her ship descended on autopilot toward the landing pad at the eastern spaceport, she reviewed her equipment and weaponry. Her garb looked like no more than a simple utilitarian tunic and pants, but they were made of densely woven shell spider silk, a material capable of resisting even a vibroblade's thrust, as well as reflecting low-power particle beams and lasers. It was armor that did not look like armor to the uninitiated. She wore twin DL-44 blasters, one on each hip, and a small disruptor pistol in a concealed ankle holster. Strapped to each wrist was an MM-9 wrist rocket, and in her right hand she wore a Palm Flechette shooter. On her utility belt she carried, among other things, a set of stun cuffs, a stun baton, and three glop grenades. Maui Lin believed in being prepared. Her first stop after disembarking from her ship was the Kaldani Spire's residential apartments. She seriously doubted that Monchar would be foolish enough to stay in an apartment registered to him, but one never knew. As she entered the lobby, the security droid on duty asked whom she wished to see. "Hath Monchar," Lin told him. The droid checked a monitor screen, then informed her that Monchar was not in. Indeed, was not even on Coruscant. Lin nodded pleasantly and clapped the circuit disruptor she had pulled from her belt onto the droid's chassis. The droid stuttered for an instant before its photoreceptors went dark. Lin took the lift tube up to the 500th floor and strolled down the corridor to Monchar's apartment, where she used an electronic lock breaker to void the security system. Once inside, she quickly checked the rooms. The droid had been telling the truth. Monchar was not there. Furthermore, the apartment appeared to have been vacant for some time. She left, going back down to the lobby and pulling the circuit disruptor off the security droid. Before it could reaccess its memory bank sufficiently to realize what had happened, Maui Lin had left and was strolling along one of the skywalks 50 stories above the surface. Lin stopped at an observation deck and enjoyed the view for a few minutes. The descriptions she had read and the hollows she had seen did not do justice to the stupendousness of the real thing. The last census put the population of Coruscant at somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 trillion living beings. Even if she could investigate one person every second, she would still need the lifespan of 100 Tatooine Sarlaccs to get to them all. But there were ways to narrow the search. Paranoid as Monchar no doubt was, he still had to eat. Lin pulled a portable holonet link from a pocket and consulted it, entering search parameters for restaurants in the area that specialized in the disgusting swill Nemoidians called food. As she had thought, there were not all that many. She glanced at her chrono and saw that it was almost the hour when most species eat their evening meal. She would go check out a few of these restaurants. It was worth putting up with the smell if it meant an early resolution to this case. Darth Maul signaled for an air taxi. Even though his speeder was not far away, he did not wish to risk anyone connecting him to it, now that he was close to his quarry. The taxi pilot, a Quarren, looked somewhat dubiously at his passenger as Maul got into the back seat, but said nothing as he was given the address. The taxi rose rapidly, straight up through 2 strata of traffic, then veered north in a long arc toward a cluster of towers in the distance. The taxi landed gently at a terminal within 50 meters of the tavern. Maul entered the tavern, stepping immediately to the shadows near the door while he looked about. He saw a cornucopia of species, all drinking or otherwise imbibing various substances capable of altering their brain chemistry. He did not see Hath Monchar. For that matter, he did not see any Nemoidians at all. Maul approached the bar. The bartender was a tall, gaunt Baragwin, his folds of facial dewlaps as leathery and creased as a bantha's skin.
"I am looking for a Nemoidian," Maul said to him. "He would have been in here within the last few hours."
The Baragwin sent a ripple running through his dewlaps from top to bottom, the equivalent of a human shaking his head.
"Many beings come in here,"
he said, his voice absurdly high and flute-like coming from such a massive head.
"They come, they drink, they talk, they go. I do not recall seeing an Nemoidian recently.
Darth Maul leaned forward.
Think again, he said softly.
He could easily use the Force to get whatever information might be had from this weak-willed creature, but there was no need. He knew he could get what he wanted by intimidation. The Baragwin's nasal polyps began to quiver, a sign of nervousness.
Upon further reflection, I do seem to remember a representative of that species imbibing here, perhaps an hour ago.
Did he speak to you or anyone else?
The Baragwin's polyps were vibrating almost too fast to see now.
No, that is, he ordered agaric ale.
And did he speak of anything else?
Yes, he inquired of me how one might contact someone proficient in the buying and selling of sensitive information.
Maul leaned back.
And you told him what?
I gave him a name.
You will now give me that name.
The Baragwin rippled his dewlaps from bottom to top in acquiescence.
Lorne Pavan, a human, Corellian, I believe. He is well known in this city sector as one who traffics in such merchandise.
And where might I find this Lorne Pavan?
I do not know.
Maul leaned forward again, his yellow eyes blazing. The Baragwin backed up hastily.
I speak the truth. He comes in here occasionally, always accompanied by a protocol droid called I-5. I know nothing more.
That was interesting news, Maul reflected. It should help to narrow the search. Personal droids were not that common in this area of Coruscant. Describe this Lorne Pavan.
Tall, muscular, black filamentous cilia on his scalp, but none on his face, brown ocular pigmentation. The females of his species would probably characterize him as handsome.
Maul nodded, then raised his right hand in a focusing gesture as he mentally reached for the Force. He had to make sure that this next question was answered truthfully, because the answer would determine whether or not he had to kill the Baragwin.
Did the Nemoidian speak at all to you about the nature of the information he wished to sell?
The dewlaps quickly undulated downward.
He did not. I have told you all that I know.
Maul sensed no negative vibration in the Force as the Baragwin spoke. He turned away without another word and exited the tavern. He strode along the outdoor concourse, pondering his next move. Though the walkway was crowded, his passage was not impeded, as most of the pedestrians gave him a wide berth, which was as it should be. Darth Maul had nothing but contempt for the masses. Of all the uncounted trillions of sentient beings that populated the galaxy, only one was deserving of respect. Darth Sidious. The only man who dared to dream of conquering not just a world or a star system, but an entire galaxy. The man who had taken the young Maul from a backwater planet and raised him to be his successor. He owed Darth Sidious everything. He returned to the problem at hand. Perhaps tracking down the human Lorne Pavan would lead him in turn to his primary target. In all probability, the Corellian human would have to be killed as well. The longer the Nemoidian was alive, the more likely his information would be disseminated. Still, Maul was not worried. If he had to wipe out this entire city sector in order to contain the news about the blockade, he would do it without a qualm. Lives did not matter. The first blow came from behind, half-stunning Darsha, and causing her to drop to her knees. A booted foot impacted against her side, driving her breath from her. Half-blinded by pain, Darsha reached for the Force as the raptors closed in, felt its power enfold her, cloak her like an invisible shield. She stood, thrusting out one arm in a warding gesture, and felt the reverberating ripples flowing outward, hurling back her surprised attackers. For a brief moment, she stood clear of them, and she used that moment to draw and activate her lightsaber. The yellow energy blade boiled out from the hilt's projector, extending to its full length.
She's a Jedi! one of the raptors, a Trandoshan, shouted. She's still dead meat, Greenhair said, but none of his gang seemed particularly anxious to be the first within reach of the lightsaber. You should have listened to me, Darsha said as she walked slowly until her back was against the skyhopper. I don't want to hurt any of you. Walk away now, while you can. She saw Greenhair and the Trandoshan exchange a glance, just a flicker of eye movement. It was enough to warn her, however, and even if it had not been, she had already sensed the disturbance in the force coming from behind her. Darsha spun and raised the blade in a high defensive movement, just in time to intercept a stocky Gotal who had leapt over the craft, aiming a vibroblade at her. The lightsaber sheared effortlessly through the Gotal's wrist, sending the blade, still clutched in the severed hand, arcing back to land in the empty vehicle. The Gotal shrieked and fell in a heap on the pavement, clutching his cauterized stump. There was a moment of utter stillness, save for the Gotal's whimpers. Events hung in delicate balance, Darsha knew. Would they swarm over her to avenge their comrade, or flee in fear? It was Greenhair who decided which course to take. He turned and ran up the street. The rest of the gang members promptly followed his lead, two of them dragging the wounded Gotal with them. In a matter of seconds, the street was completely deserted, save for Darsha and Ulf the Fondorian. Darsha moved quickly to Ulf, who was lying on his back, moaning and still kicking feebly in an effort to dislodge the armored rat. Darsha touched the tip of the lightsaber's blade to the creature's neck, right at the soft juncture between the head and body carapaces, and the rat released its grip and bolted toward the shadows. Darsha deactivated the lightsaber and pulled Ulf to his feet. Let's go, before they come back with reinforcements.
What took you so long? That blasted rat nearly gnawed my leg off.
A pity it wasn't your head, Darsha thought. Just be grateful I was able to chase them away. Now, let's get out of here. She helped him climb into the passenger side of the skyhopper, then settled herself behind the controls, and realized that they weren't going anywhere.
Come on, what are you waiting for? Lift off!
I can't. She pointed at the console, where the activated vibroblade, still gripped by the Gotal's severed hand, had sunk to the hilt in the panel. Sparks and smoke were still faintly visible, and she could hear the faint hum of the weapon's high-frequency oscillation. It's cut through the controls for the stabilizer vanes. We'll spin like a corkscrew if we try to fly in this. Ulf stared at the blade, then at her.
I don't believe this. Some Jedi you are. You managed to disable your own ship.
Darsha bit back on several scathing replies that came to mind, saying instead, It's just a setback. I've got my comlink. I'll just call the temple for... She left the sentence unfinished, for as she was speaking, she was reaching into her tunic for her comlink. The moment her fingers touched it, she realized it was unusable as well. The plague light casing was shattered, no doubt by that kick she had received from one of the raptors. Before she could explain this latest reversal to Ulf, the windshield in front of her suddenly cracked in a starburst. Simultaneously, she heard the muffled report of a projectile weapon. Someone, most likely one of the raptors, was shooting at them. Darsha made a quick decision. They would have to abandon the skyhopper. They had to get up levels as quickly as possible. She glanced about them and realized that such an action was easier said than done. Most of the buildings were blocked off above levels 10 or 12. The inhabitants of the upper stories didn't even acknowledge the existence of those lower floors. But they couldn't stay here. As if to underscore that fact, another bolt from the hidden sniper whistled past her ear. Out of the ship, fast! Darsha jumped to the pavement, pulling her ascension gun from her utility belt. She fired the grappling hook straight up at maximum length, hoping to strike a ledge or projection above the fog layer. Another blast struck the windshield. Ulf screeched in fear and leapt out of the skyhopper.
What are you doing? We have to get out of here!
That's exactly what we're doing, Darsha said, as she felt the vibration down the length of the cable, which meant the hook had found purchase. Hang on to me.
She grabbed the Fondorian around his waist and thumbed the winding mechanism. Darsha knew that if they could make it up to the first traffic skylane around level 20, they could find an air taxi and get back to the temple, or at least find a working comm station from which to call for help. Another bolt caromed off the wall directly beneath them as they rose quickly up past the first level, then the second, then the third. Darsha's arm felt like it was being pulled from its socket. She looked up and estimated that the fog was hovering at around level 10. Once they were enveloped, they would be safe enough from the sniper. A massive shadow flitted past her, followed by several more. In the dimming light, she wasn't sure what they were at first. Then she saw one clearly, and recognition sent a chill of fear through her. Hawk bats. Suddenly, they were enveloped in a shrieking, flapping nightmare of wings, beaks, and talons. Distracted, Darsha buried her head in her shoulder as best she could to protect her eyes. She tried to summon the Force, to use it as a shield against the creatures. But the fierce buffeting of their wings made holding on to the ascension gun the best she could manage. Oof tightened his grip around her chest until she felt in danger of suffocating. He shouted with pain and fear as the winged furies strafed the two of them. The claws on the edges of their leathery wings tore at Darsha's clothes. Her vision was full of beaks and angry ruby eyes. Oof screamed again, louder this time. She glanced down and saw that one of the hawk bats had landed on his shoulder and was savagely pecking at his face. Darsha felt his grip lessen. "Hang on," she shouted. "We're almost through this." Oof cried out again, louder than all his previous cries. Darsha looked down at him, saw that one of the hawk bats had hooked its cruel beak into his right eye. Mad with pain, the Fondorian let go of her, raising both hands to push away his winged tormentor. "No!" Darsha shouted, trying to hang on to him with her free hand, but his weight was too much. His shirt tore, leaving a swatch of it in her grip as he dropped with a trailing cry down into the darkness. Darsha knew there was no point in trying to go after him, even if there was any way it could be accomplished. She was 7 or 8 levels up now, and the fall had undoubtedly been fatal. A moment later, she entered the fog level, but the hawk bats showed no sign of lessening their attack. Already, her skin was cut and torn in a score of wounds. At this rate, she wouldn't survive to reach the upper levels. Only one course of action promised even a faint hope of survival. Each level that slipped by her had a line of dark windows. Darsha released the winding control and drew her lightsaber. As her ascent slowed and then stopped, she swung the energy blade, melting a large hole through the transparaceal of the window next to her. She got a foot on the ledge beneath it and tumbled through, releasing the ascension gun as she fell forward into darkness. She turned the fall into a shoulder roll, holding the lightsaber away from her, as she had been taught, to avoid self-inflicted injury. She came to her feet, the weapon held ready to defend herself against the hawk bats. But apparently there was no need. None of them pursued her into the building. Slowly, Darsha abandoned her fighting stance. She looked around, trying to take stock of her surroundings. It was fully dark outside now. The broken window was merely a patch of lesser darkness. Darsha listened, both with her ears and with the Force. No sound, and no sense of danger. For the moment, she seemed to be safe. Of course, that depended on one's definition of safe. She was trapped in the abandoned lower levels of a building in the infamous Crimson Corridor. She had no comlink and no transportation. Worse still, she had failed in her mission. The man she had been sent to save now lay dead in the street far below. If this was safe, Darsha thought grimly, maybe she ought to consider another line of work. Assuming she made it back alive. Lorne awoke feeling like a herd of banthas had stampeded over him. He risked opening one eye. The light in the cubicle was very dim, but even so, it felt like a blaster beam had fired straight into his eye and up the optic nerve to his brain.
He groaned, hastily shut the eye, and wrapped both arms around his head for good measure. Somewhere in the darkness, he heard I-5 say, "If you're going to continue such behavior, I suggest having a few healthy liver cells removed, if indeed you have any left, and cryogenically stored, since you may need that particular organ cloned in the near future. I can recommend a very good MD-5 medical droid of my acquaintance."
"All right, all right."
Lorne sat up, cradling his aching head in his hands, and glared at the droid. He found himself wondering once again how a droid with only one fixed facial expression and limited body language could manage to look so disapproving. "I think you should have a look at these messages that came in while you were comatose." "What messages?" It was too much to hope that Zipper had decided to sell him the holocron after all. "These messages," the droid replied patiently and activated the message unit. A flickering image of an enormous, blubbery body formed in midair over the unit. Lorne recognized Yanth the Hutt.
"Lorne,"
the image said.
"I thought we were going to meet sometime today to discuss a certain holocron you wish me to look at. It's not polite to keep buyers waiting, you know."
The image dissolved. "Thanks," Lorne said to I-5. "If you're not too busy later, I've got a scraped knuckle you could rub some salt into." "I think your attitude may change when you see the next message." The second image materialized above the projector. It wasn't Zipper or Yanth. That much was immediately evident. After a moment, Lorne recognized the species. A Nemoidian. The Nemoidian glanced around furtively before leaning in close and speaking softly.
"Lorne Parvan, your name was mentioned to me as someone who can be discreet in handling sensitive information," he said. "I wish to discuss a matter that could be very profitable to both of us. If you are interested, meet me at the Dewback Inn at 0900. Tell no one of this."
The three-dimensional image winked out. He pressed a button that deleted the second message and glanced at I-5. "What do you think?"
"I think we have 17 Republic desecreds in the bank and whatever change might have fallen under the sleeping pad. I think the rent is due in a week. I think," I-5 said, "that we should talk to this Nemoidian."
"I think so too," Lorne said. The time of the evening meal was almost over. Maui Lin had by now investigated 4 restaurants whose menus included Nemoidian cuisine. Only one of them was occupied by a Nemoidian at table, a female. Lin had questioned her, but she had professed no knowledge of a countryman named Hathmonchar. She had, however, told Lin of another eatery in the area that her kind had been known to frequent. It was a small tavern called the Dewback Inn, one of the few drinking establishments in the sector that featured agaric ale, a beverage most Nemoidians were extremely fond of. Lin decided to check it out. It had not been terribly difficult to find Lorne Parvan's dwelling cubicle. As Darth Maul approached it, he saw the door open. A human and a droid, the latter one of the Protocol series, emerged. Maul quickly faded back into the shadows of the underground thoroughfare and watched them pass. Both matched the descriptions he had been given by the Baraguin bartender. Excellent. With any luck, they would lead him to his prey. He followed them at a safe distance, making use of shadows and concealment when it was available, and trusting to the cloaking power of the Force when it was not. The human and his droid emerged from the underground thoroughfare and proceeded along the narrow surface streets. It was late at night, but the planetary city never slept. The streets were crowded no matter what time of day or night it was. This was fortunate, in that it made it easier for Maul to keep his quarry in sight without being noticed. It would not be much longer, Maul told himself. He would bring this job to a successful conclusion, and then perhaps Darth Sidious would reward him with a task more worthy of his abilities. Something like the Black Sun assignment. That had been a challenge he had enjoyed. Pavan and his droid turned down another street, then entered a doorway under a hanging sign decorated with a rampant dewback. This was their destination, then. Despite his near-perfect control of his nervous system, Maul felt his pulse quicken slightly in anticipation. If all went as planned, soon this onerous chore would be over. He entered the tavern. Lorne looked around the dingy, ill-lit interior. The Dewback Inn was even less reputable-looking than the Glowstone, and that was saying something. There weren't many customers, but each one that he noticed looked like he or she or it had seen their share of combat. I-5 surveyed the room as well. "It just keeps getting better," the droid said. Lorne noticed a sign above the bar that read, "No droids allowed," in basic. He also noticed several of the patrons looking suspiciously at I-5. "I think you'd better wait outside," he told the droid. "Sorry."
"I think I can deal with the rejection."
I-5 went back outside. Lorne saw a Nemoidian sitting alone at a corner table looking very uncomfortable. As he started to make his way through the tables, he heard the door open behind him, and out of the corner of his eye he glimpsed a cloaked and hooded form entering. The newcomer had a sinister aspect about him, but then with the possible exception of the Nemoidian, so did everyone else in the room, so Lorne didn't give the new arrival much thought. As he drew near the Nemoidian's table, he felt his arm seized abruptly in an iron grasp. "Hey!" he tried to pull free, but his assailant, a Trandoshan, was far stronger than he was. His struggles alerted the Nemoidian, who looked up.
"Are you Lorne Pavan?"
he asked. "That's me. Call off your bully boy." The Nemoidian made a gesture.
"Release him, Gorth."
The Trandoshan let Lorne go. Lorne pulled back a chair and sat down, rubbing his arms, both of which had gone somewhat numb from the reptilian being's grip.
"I do apologize,"
the Nemoidian said, his gaze darting here and there about the bar as he spoke.
"You can understand my desire to have some protection in a place like this."
"Let's get down to business," Lorne said. "What do you have?" As Darth Maul slipped into the Dewback Inn, he kept his cowl up and moved to the darkest corner. He had spotted his prey immediately. The urge to simply step up and sever the Nemoidian's head from his body was tempting, but he knew that would be foolishness. He would have to kill the big Trandoshan bodyguard first, and probably the Corellian as well. Slaying three people, even in a pit such as this, would not go unnoticed. Calling attention to oneself in a public place would be bad. His master had impressed that upon Maul at an early age. The Sith were powerful, but there were only two of them. Stealth was therefore one of their greatest strengths. The human dealer in information was speaking with the doomed Nemoidian, and likely that sealed the man's fate as well. Maui Lin trekked through back streets and alleys searching for the Dewback Inn. She was certainly not over-impressed with this area of Coruscant. The surface streets in this sector were all twisted turnings and narrow byways, teeming with gutter scum looking for an easy mark. Lin wasn't particularly worried about her safety. She had been in much worse places than this and survived. She came to an intersection, hesitated briefly, then chose the right fork. Another person could easily get lost and stay lost in this maze, but Maui Lin always got where she was supposed to go, and she always came out on top when she got there. She was, quite simply, the best at what she did, as Hath Monchar would soon find out. After climbing a few flights of stairs, Darsha Asant reached the lowest inhabited levels of the building. Here she found what passed for a pharmacy at the end of a squalid corridor. She had lost her regular credit tab along the way, though she still had her emergency tab. It was good for only a small amount, not nearly enough to rent a speeder, unfortunately, but sufficient to purchase enough antibiotic synth flesh bandage to treat and seal her wounds, and even hire a taxi, if it didn't have to go far.
Feeling somewhat better after she smoothed the healing synth flesh into place, she looked for a quiet spot, preferably one with walls to protect her back and sides, to ponder what she should do next. Darja sat down on a graffiti-scarred bench and sought to center herself as she had been taught. It was no use. The stillness that a Jedi should always operate from was nowhere to be found. She had disgraced herself, her mentor, and her heritage. She would never become a Jedi Knight now. Maybe it would have been better to have died, to have been eaten by the Hawk Bats. At least she would not have to face Master Bandara, not have to see the disappointment in her mentor's eyes. What was she going to do? She could find a public comm station and call for help. The Council would send a Jedi, a real Jedi, she thought bitterly, to come and fetch her. She would be escorted back as if she were a child, taken into custody so that she could do no more damage. She envisioned entering the temple with such an escort. That would be all that was needed to make her shame complete. Darja clenched her jaw muscles. No, that wasn't how it was going to go. She had failed in her mission, true enough, but she still had her lightsaber, and she still had some pride, if only a trace of what it had been. She could find some way to return to the Council under her own power. She owed that much, at least, to Master Bandara, and to herself. Lorne could not believe his luck. Finally, it looked like things were taking a turn for the better. Carefully, so as not to reveal his enthusiasm, he said to the Nemoidian, "And you say you have recorded all this information, the details of the impending blockade and the fact that the Sith are behind it, on a holocron?"
"That is correct,"
Munchar replied. "And may I, see this crystal?"
"I would not carry it around on my person in such places, even with Gorth as a protector. The holocron is safely stored and guarded elsewhere."
Lorne leaned back. "I see. And you would want to sell it for how much?"
"500,000 Republic credits."
Lorne grinned. The way to play this was cool and easy. 500,000? Why, sure. You have change for 1,000,000 cred note?" The Nemoidian gave Lorne a fishy smile in return.
"I'm afraid not."
Lorne had played this game before, and he knew it was time to palaver. "All right. If it is what you say it is, I might be willing to go 250,000.
"Don't insult me,"
Munchar replied.
"If it is what I say it is, and I assure you it is, the information on that crystal is worth twice what I am asking. More in the right hands. 500,000 credits, period. You'll stand to make that much and more off it if you have the wits of a Sarkonian green flea."
That was true, Lorne knew. Of course, if he could lay his hands on 500,000 creds, he wouldn't be sitting in this dive trying to negotiate stolen data. But there was no way he could let a deal like this pass. "All right, 500,000. Where shall we make the exchange?" The Nemoidian touched a button on a wristband, and a small holographic projection lit up just above the surface of the table, no bigger than Lorne's thumb.
"Here is the address of my cubicle,"
Munchar said.
"Meet me there in an hour. Come alone."
1 hour. Lorne kept his expression carefully noncommittal. I might need a little longer than that to raise the funds."
1 hour,
Munchar repeated.
"If you cannot procure funding by then, I will seek others who are more capable. I am told there is a hut, Yunt by name, who would be most interested in this commodity."
"I know Yunt. You don't want to deal with him. He's shiftier than a crystal snake."
"Then bring me the money, and we will consummate this transaction."
Lorne memorized the address and nodded. Munchar shut the holo off. "Okay, no problem," Lorne said. "I'll see you in an hour." He stood and wended his way toward the door. Outside, I-5 was waiting.
"Well?"
the droid said as they walked down the narrow street. Lorne explained quickly as they walked. So, we've got an hour, actually 55 minutes, to raise 500,000 credits. He looked at the droid. Any thoughts?
It is an excellent opportunity, to be sure. In fact, it might well be the chance of your lifetime, though I expect to have better opportunities myself, since I will probably outlive you by a factor of 7.4 to 7.6, at a conservative estimate, disallowing major accidents, natural disasters, or acts of war.
We're on the chrono, and you're discussing actuarial tables. The big question is, where are we going to get 500,000 credits in less than an hour?
That is indeed the question.
We could find a card game. I'm good at sabacc.
But not consistently. If you were, we wouldn't be in this situation. And since we have no money of which to speak, who in all of the underground would give us enough of a marker to buy into a sufficiently high-stakes game?
Offhand, I'd say nobody, Lorne admitted. I-5 cleared his speaking circuits in what sounded almost like a human cough.
There is only one viable option. Bank fraud.
Lorne stopped to stare at I-5.
I'm listening, he told the droid.
I have been considering this idea for some time,
I-5 said,
keeping it in reserve as a final contingency plan.
They continued to walk while I-5 elaborated. They wouldn't really be able to steal the money, but the droid was confident he could hack into the data flow of one of Coruscant's many banking firms and manage a phantom transfer of funds into their personal account. The auditor droids would catch it almost immediately, so timing would be critical. But if all went well, Lorne would be able to show Hathmon Char an unencumbered credit tab that was worth 500,000. Much more than that, the droid explained, would kick in automatic inquiries. And if they tried to transfer the funds after the audit, the bank would catch that too. The real trick would be to have the Nemoidian accept the credit tab as payment and make the transfer to his account before time ran out.
The window will be narrow, I-5 concluded, but in theory it can be done.
Lorne felt an excitement he hadn't known in years as he contemplated it. It would work, and they would use the money to build a new life out on the rim. There were plenty of worlds where, with enough money, one could disappear into a new identity and live a life of ease with no questions asked. A new life. A real life this time. Maybe not the one he had before, but certainly a better one than this hard-scrabble existence he was suffering through now. Of course, it would mean leaving behind any possibility of ever seeing Jax again. So what? A savage voice in the back of his head asked. Like there's any chance at all of that now. That's in the past. It's time you started living again. Yes, far past time, in fact. He looked at I-5, and though there was no expression on the droid's metallic countenance, he felt certain that I-5 knew exactly what he was thinking. What are we waiting for? He asked the droid. The hut's still expecting us to bring him a holocron? Why disappoint him? Let's find a data port and make it happen. The gods of fortune smiled upon Maui Lin. Just as she arrived at the Dubek Inn, she saw the Nemoidian depart in the company of a hulking brute of a Trandoshan. The big reptiloid with Monchar sported a pair of blasters, one on each hip, and moved like a bodyguard, which, undoubtedly, he was. She was about to fall in behind at a safe distance when someone else emerged from the inn, a robed and cowled figure, bipedal and human-sized, who slipped into the shadow of a doorway across the alley. Lin didn't get a look at the face, but whoever he was obviously interested in Monchar. Lin quickly moved out of sight. Sure enough, the robed figure followed the Nemoidian and the Trandoshan, keeping to the dimly lit areas and moving with a stealth that Lin had to admire. If this fellow could shoot half as well as he could tail, he could drill the Trandoshan and be on the Nemoidian in a hurry. Lin frowned and loosened her own DL-44s in their holsters. This job was threatening to become complicated. She decided the best course was to take out the bodyguard and the mysterious robed tracker as quickly as possible. If she had to, she could use a Glop grenade on Monchar,
seal him up in a gel bubble, and haul him back to Gunray like that, though she didn't think it would be necessary. She'd never met a brave Nemoidian, never even heard of one. And she didn't think Hath Monchar would prove the exception to the rule. Darth Maul melded with the darkness, becoming a shade among shadows, a ghost in the fetid gloom. He had plenty of cover, and the lumbering pair in front of him had no idea they were being followed. As he surveilled the Nemoidian and his guard, however, Maul felt a small prickling of something, not real danger, but a kind of disquiet, touch his awareness. He looked about and listened carefully, but did not see any cause for this. He expanded his consciousness, let the dark currents of the Force extend outward from him, and became aware of another presence behind him, hidden from normal sight and hearing. Probably just another of the many predators in this dreary place looking for prey. Now that he was aware of the presence, Maul dismissed it. He felt no real concentrations of the Force emanating from the Hidden Watcher, and thus whoever he was and whatever his reasons for being here, he did not pose a threat. The Nemoidian and his guard took a convoluted path, turning and twisting back, until finally they arrived at a block of small cubic living units. The pair entered the building through a locked durasteel door that Monchar opened with his thumbprint. Maul waited a few moments, then approached the door. Maui Lin was a bit slow in arriving at the domicile. Though she couldn't put her finger on the exact reason why, she felt sure the robed stalker tailing the Nemoidian had somehow known he was being tailed in turn. Lin didn't think she'd been seen, and she'd moved with as much stealth as she could muster, which was considerable, but the feeling had persisted, and as a result she had dropped back. She was trusting that the lurker in the cowl wouldn't lose Monchar, and so she let the Nemoidian and his bodyguard get far enough ahead that she couldn't see them. It was a risky business to track a tracker and not the primary subject, but she didn't see that she had much choice. Given all that, by the time she got closer, the Nemoidian and the bodyguard were already inside, or so she assumed, and the tracker in the cowl was just arriving at the door. There came a sudden flash of light, the source of which was hidden by the tracker's body. Lin ducked behind a garbage bin as the light strobed. When she looked again, the door was wide open, and the cowled figure was nowhere in sight. Lin pulled her left blaster, keeping her right hand clear to use the palm flechette shooter, the quieter and therefore preferable weapon. She hurried across the dim street. When she reached the door, she paused in surprise. Where the locking mechanism had been on the durasteel plate was a still-smoking semicircular hole, its glowing edges carved as cleanly as if done by laser surgery. The lock and handle lay on the ground, also smoldering from whatever tool had cut them free. Lin knew of only a couple of devices that could excise a thick slab of durasteel so fast and smoothly. A plasma torch, which was much too big to hide under a cloak and haul around, or a lightsaber. And the only people she knew of who used lightsabers were Jedi. Lin swallowed dryly, her belly suddenly roiling. If the Jedi were somehow involved, the risk factor had just shot off the scale. For a second, she seriously considered turning around and heading for the spaceport. Hako hadn't said anything about Jedi. But no, she was a professional, trained and adept. She couldn't have word getting around that she had backed away from a job, no matter what the reason. She was just going to have to take it very slowly and carefully from here on. Lorne and I-5 walked down the narrow street toward their destination, keeping to the middle so as to avoid being surprised by a robber looking for a quick knockover. Lorne had a small blaster in his tunic's pocket, gripped in his right hand. The idea of living on a planet where you didn't have to worry about such things every time you stepped outside was most appealing. And seeing things under the natural light of a sun was a novel concept, too. They'd been down here far too long. It was definitely time for a change. "So the scam transfer went all right?" he asked I-5. "For the seventh time, yes, it went all right.
We have precisely 1 hour and 26 minutes before it's discovered and rectified by the auditor droids. Perhaps another 4 minutes before they are able to pinpoint the location of the credit tab and, depending on how busy the local police are, anywhere from 6 to 14 minutes before they arrive to take the bearer of the tab into custody for attempted grand theft and illegal use of communication protocols THX-1138.
Spare me the details. We have less than 1 hour and 45 minutes to get this deal done and be on our way. How much farther is this place?
At our present rate of speed, we'll arrive in 2.6 minutes, plenty of time to accomplish our task, as well as fence the holocron to the hut.
Assuming the Nemoidian doesn't want to have a drink and chat about Republic politics and the latest high-low ball scores.
Since you are to negotiate alone, I trust you will find some way to skip the small talk. Time's running out, and the fake ID I utilized on the transfer won't slow the authorities for more than another few minutes after they collect the credit tab. So decline liquid refreshment and idle chit-chat and get the deal done. That's my considered advice.
Finding the Nemoidian was child's play for Maul. Walls could not stop the dark, questing fingers of the Force. When he arrived at the correct domicile, he sensed that there were 4 beings behind the door. Monchar, of course, and the bodyguard he had seen accompanying him. The dull ripples of the other two rumbled with suppressed violence. More guards, no doubt. Darth Maul pulled his double lightsaber from his belt and held his thumb upon the ignition button. He took a deep breath and centered himself in the swirls and eddies of the dark side. Then, his power and concentration thus augmented, he thrust forward his free hand as though hurling an invisible ball. The door shattered inward. As soon as he was through the door, Maul triggered his lightsaber. The bright beams lanced out to their full lengths. He took in the room. The Nemoidian sat in a chair against the far wall. A pair of squid heads scrabbled for their holstered blasters. The Trandoshan bodyguard already had his out, and now he fired it. Maul spun the lightsaber and angled it slightly. Stopping the blaster fire was easy. Redirecting it properly was a bit more difficult, but certainly not impossible. The bolt bounced from the potent energy lance and ricocheted into the nearest squid head, striking him on the thorax. The quarren collapsed. Maul allowed himself a slight frown. The deflected beam was 2 centimeters lower than he had aimed. Poor control on his part. A second blaster bolt from the Trandoshan seared its way at him, and another quick shift, guided by the dark side, caught that bolt and returned it to the sender. The Trandoshan took the deflected beam in the face. He went down, twitching in his death throes, his face a blackened ruin of flesh and scales, at the horrified Nemoidian's feet. Better. Maul leapt at the remaining squid head, who had his blaster halfway up. The quarren fired a panicked round, far too low to do any damage save to the floor. Then the lightsaber arced, and with a snap of his wrists, Maul lopped the squid head's tentacled head from his neck. The battle had begun and ended far too quickly for the Nemoidian to even think about running. He cowered in the chair, hands uselessly raised to ward off danger. He didn't even have a weapon. Maul shut the lightsaber off and hooked it back on his belt. He spared a contemptuous glance at the 3 corpses. His dueling droids had given him a better fight than these 3 had. Pitiful. He turned toward the terrified Nemoidian. Slowly he raised his gloved hands and slipped his cowl back and off, revealing his frightening visage. He smiled, showing his teeth, adding to the effect. A pungent reek became noticeable over the stench of death in the room. The Nemoidian's bladder sack had let go its contents. "Hath Monchar," Darth Maul said. "We have things to discuss, you and I." Caught in the power of the dark side, the Nemoidian struggled to breathe. Maul's left hand, raised before him, tightened into a fist, and the Nemoidian's throat constricted even more. "Ready to talk?" Maul asked. The Nemoidian could not speak, but he managed to nod.
Maul relaxed his fist and his concentration. Hathmonchar collapsed on the floor, wheezing as he tried to suck in a breath. Who else knows?
No one.